Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Thursday edition of The Drive. This will be, I guess, the closest thing to a normal Thursday that we've had in quite a while, and we won't again for another week or two. But yeah, welcome in on a day where it's been sort of overcast, but pretty pleasant temperature-wise outside. Hope everybody doing well as we approach the end of the week and get ready for the semifinals, the first semifinal game of the college football playoffs tonight. Coming up 7 o'clock with Miami and Ole Miss. Neither one of them exactly playing close to home. I mean, it's crazy how this one turned out. You've got the first semifinal being played out west with Miami and Ole Miss. And then tomorrow night in Atlanta, you've got the rematch of Indiana and Oregon. But, yeah, those are your final four and game one of the college football playoff semis tonight. We'd love your thoughts on that. A lot more to talk about. Transfer portal, as we know, Auburn adding another, I guess it's just one player since we went off the air yesterday, but the latest, a defensive lineman. Meanwhile, speaking of defensive linemen, we know where a couple of Auburn defensive linemen are now headed, and they are in the conference. And, I mean, a lot of the Auburn players are staying in the SEC, and I think that's good for them and good for those schools. I don't know how exciting it is for Auburn that they're going to play against a lot of their former teammates, but yes, today Amaris Williams headed to Georgia, while Malik Blockton will be an LSU Tiger.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, this is one of those things where you built a really good roster. It's not surprising that really good teams want to get
those guys.
A handful of guys going to Missouri as well.
Yeah, like four thus far to Missouri.
Kayan Lee to Tennessee. I mean, like, there's been a bunch of these guys.
And Jake Crawford to Ole Miss.
Right.
I mean, it's just all over the conference.
It makes sense. I think it also underscores just kind of how much Auburn underachieved.
Yes,
with these
absolutely.
Guys. Because, you know, these are really, really good, valuable football players that, you know, obviously Auburn needed to – you know, they wanted to bring these guys back. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. It's like, you know, and I saw some people be like today, like, well, you know, how can they go to these other places? How did Auburn not pay them enough? It's more than just money for these guys as well. So you got to keep that in mind. But I do like what Auburn is building for a team that, you know, five straight losing seasons. You're in rebuild mode. And I like a lot of the pieces they've brought in to this point. And, you know, you mentioned Cody Sigler. The Arkansas State pickup, I really like him. Like, his numbers on, like, PFF are, like, really, really high. I think he was a top 10 defensive tackle in the country this year in terms of just how he graded out.
And Auburn really needed – they need more help there up front defensively, but they needed a guy like him, an experienced player. And he's really worked his way up from West Alabama to Arkansas State and now into the SEC.
You got to love the pairing with him and, like – you put him in a room that's got Malik Autry and Jordan Crawford and those guys coming back. Mm-hmm. I really like the pairing there because, like, all right, you got these young blue chip guys who have flashed and have shown, you know, that they could be really big time players maybe for you down the line. And then you get this guy in here who has fought his way from Division II to get an SEC spot. And here's the other thing about Sigler. A lot of SEC schools were after this kid.
Oh, yeah.
Big, big time player. So one of the better guys I think Auburn could have gotten in the portal. And I just like, you know, even if he's not a superstar at Auburn, if he's just a piece in the rotation, you need him. And I think really good work by Vontrell King-Williams and the Auburn staff to lock him down, because I think this was one they had to fight for a while. I mean, people may say, oh, he was at Arkansas State. Now go watch the tape. Go look at his numbers. This dude can play. This dude can play, and he's getting rewarded with a spot at an SEC school in his home state.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's really cool. I was going to point that out. I mean, he's from New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, started his career at West Alabama, so he's back in his home state in the SEC.
Yeah, really, really cool story for him. And you know, I think you just need kind of more guys like that. You know, different kind of set of circumstances.
Stanton Ramil. Yeah.
Stanton Ramil was a really good pickup for them. yesterday. You know, that's the kind of offensive lineman I think you want to have long term at Auburn. If you're going into the portal, get somebody who's done it at a power conference if you can, who's done it for multiple seasons.
And he has multiple seasons too. He's got 2 years left. Jason, yeah. Yesterday Jason was saying he reminds him of Lee Zimba.
Yeah, I saw him say that on on 247 as well. He's huge. I mean, he's got some stuff you can't teach. And I would tend to, you know, I write about this in the mailbag that goes up tomorrow at the Observer. I would tend to not put a ton of rankings, you know, transfer portal ranking stuff in the offensive line, because I think Auburn is example A of how all those things might not necessarily work out.
Yeah, well, we've seen that. Auburn has brought in guys that have been ranked the top players available.
I like fit, and I just kind of profile more than necessarily, oh, is this guy number one, number two, number three? And they're now, for example, I think Ramil is a really, really good example of multi-year starter at a big conference, knows the area, has got multiple years of eligibility remaining. He's huge. He was a blue chip guy mm-hmm. coming out of high school. Okay, all those things are good. I like that. I also like, you know, obviously the kid from Ohio State that visiting. Now, he's the number
Shibola,
two.
Right.
Yeah, he's the number two offensive lineman, interior offensive lineman in the portal. He checks every box there. But, like, you know, it was when Auburn was those LSU offensive linemen, guys like that. Instead of necessarily saying, okay, this dude's the biggest name in the portal, let's go get him. Well, I hate to, you know, remind Auburn fans of this, but, you know, one of the biggest names in the offensive tackle in the portal, didn't quite work out this past season.
Each of the last 2 years, Auburn has, you know, Percy was big in the portal, and but look, X was much bigger.
And look, Avery Jones and Dylan Wade were two of the biggest names in the transfer portal when they came out. And they were, I think they turned out to be solid offensive line. Mm-hmm. But it didn't, like, all of a sudden, like, these we now have an all offensive line. No.
I think this
is going to take time.
I do wonder if, hey everybody. I do wonder if the overall level of, like, starter quality talent or the number of guys that you know, go into the portal in the offensive line and can start is changing, just because we're seeing the number of overall players in the portal kind of grow every single year. So, like, I think
this year they're probably more of everything.
But
in the portal.
But I also do wonder. I mean, like, for all of the acquisitions that are very exciting, you know, that have been that Alex Golish and his staff have pulled off in the last couple of days, I do think there's also, like, some interesting retentions, right? Like, there's the possibility that, I mean, you've got some young guys that maybe didn't break through under Hugh Freeze on the offensive line. We've talked about Jacoby Ward and Ty Buster maybe being guys that could compete on the offensive line for starting jobs. Cale Ellis, clearly. And then, I don't know, I'm curious about, you know, Bryce Kane and some of the receivers that are deciding to stick around and what kind of role they could have this.
I'm going to be interested, guys, in if Auburn adds another, and they're obviously not done pursuing wide receivers. It'll be interesting to see if the guys who have been here still all stick, because, I mean, Justin, it's surprising. I mean, you've had Noah Rogers on. They've got the Ohio State receiver visiting. They're still targeting other ones. And, of course, there's Keyshawn Singleton that everyone's waiting, you know, for that announcement. But there's no question that receiver has obviously been a big priority for this staff.
And they seem to have prioritized familiarity, not just with Alex Golish's system, but if you believe in chemistry between quarterbacks and receivers, right? Like, one would think that the fact that Byron Brown is not just, I mean, he's making the jump from USF to Auburn. Like, that, and that's, you know, with everything that entails, going from the American to the SEC. But most quarterbacks, Justin, don't have the luxury when they make that jump of,
he's got a chance of bringing pretty much his entire primary receiving core with him.
Everybody who could have joined probably could. I like Nakai Davenport too a lot. I mean, I really, really like his game. I think he's a great fit.
Running back.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like Jeremiah Cobb is going to be hanging around, and Omar Mabson, those guys. I really like just a rotation. They're still trying to add more
right
at running back, obviously. the tight ends they've got. I know they get the one from USF.
I don't think they're planning on being done there either.
No. They've reached out there, but like getting a couple of guys who are 4 stars and are like, well, mm-hmm. they're 6'6" and you know they can run really well. Like you like the feeling, but yeah, you know I write about this today or also in the mailbag that comes out tomorrow at the Observer. It's like when I look at Byron Brown, I'm like, you know, some people consider him to be the second best player quarterback in this portal. The only guy ahead of him in all the rankings I've seen is Sam Leavitt. And Sam Leavitt's a great player. Sam Leavitt's also coming off of a knee injury and is going to cost a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Sam Leavitt's also going to be walking into a brand-new situation. Like Dan was saying, if you're Byron Brown, you're walking into a situation where you got all the pieces around you and your coach.
Your play caller.
How about this stat? And I tweeted about this earlier in the week when Auburn had it and put it in my film room of Byron Brown. You can check out at the Observer. But this will be the first time Auburn has had a starting quarterback and an offensive coordinator that were together in back-to-back seasons since Jarrett Stidham and Chip Lindsey in 2017
and
2018.
Yeah, that's crazy.
This is year 4 of a partnership between those two guys. Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it with Alex Gullis, Joel Gordon, and Byron Brown.
The last time Auburn had a streak where their starting quarterback and their offensive coordinator had been around for more than 2 years was Al Borges and Brandon Cox. Yeah, so it's like it's been a long line. And mm-hmm. it's harder to do that in the portal era. Yeah. And obviously, you know, you can only do that for 1 year if you're Auburn and then everything resets next season. But you talk about building a bridge. It's going to be, I think it's – and he's a guy that I think Byron Brown is the type of quarterback. His style of play and his talent level and his experience in the system. I think Auburn's roster is going to have some deficiencies next season. It's not going to be a team built to contend right away. But I think they're going to be a pretty competitive team because of the way he plays. I think he's a guy that can elevate a lot of the guys around him. Even if on paper, he's not throwing to Cam Coleman, you know, or Eric Singleton or Perry Thompson or those guys next year. And he's not got an offensive lineman that's got a bunch of 5 stars on it. Duke's done really well without that.
Yeah,
and I think there's a lot of that continuity that should help.
Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer in the studio along with Bill and Dan. Drew at the controls. We're just underway here on the Thursday edition of The Drive. We'll check in with David Pascal in hour number 2 as well. But in the meantime, love to hear from you. You can call us on The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390. As we said, game 1 of the college football semifinals tonight, Miami and Ole Miss. We'll obviously talk some basketball as well. So we're wide open. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
Hi, this is Tyler Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer.
I suppose we do have to talk a little bit about Auburn, Texas A&M, because I think all three of us were in the house.
Oh, yeah, I said we got to talk back. We definitely have to talk some basketball.
Can I tell you the memory I will have the last – because I've told this story a couple of times.
I've given you a new one now with the cookie.
The cookie one's good, but – my lasting memory, because I was there. I was standing right next to Justin Ferguson for that last sequence, all of us sort of trying to process what we just saw.
I was, you know, our seats, and then, of course, you're directly across and up from me, so you're looking at him shooting. I'm right behind him, you know, up in our seats watching him shooting.
Justin, in real time, what did you think of the shot
I thought it was good.
Yeah. In real time.
Let's be clear. Let's be clear. You have to go down to maybe a certain angle where it may or may not have shown that the clock was at all zeros when he still had a fingertip on the ball.
Well, it depends on I guess it depends on which clock you're looking at.
Looks too. At that, which clock?
That's a concern, but sure. I
think that's an issue everywhere.
Oh,
though.
It is. But it's when you've got a situation like this,
yeah,
it becomes obvious. But yeah, I mean, I understand Stephen still not being thrilled because to say that there that somewhere there's indisputable evidence, let's see it.
Yeah, let's see it. Let's see it. He said today that he had not seen it.
No, I bumped into Ted yesterday, Ted Feely at lunch yesterday, and he was saying, "Yeah, they've asked. They haven't been offered that indisputable evidence."
Yeah.
Now I also have not seen, and again, keeping in mind that the original call on the floor was that the shot was good.
That's right.
I have not seen a shot where it seems like there's 0.01 on the game clock and the ball is clearly out.
Yeah, it's close.
No, you're right. Fingers.
It's borderline, and it's one of those things like you say you have indisputable video evidence to overturn it, okay? If it was the other way, you know, Pearl said this today. It's like if they would have said it was no good originally, I'd have been like, yeah, probably. Like, you know,
then you'd stick with it. But to overturn, there should be something that shows different. Right. Look,
I'm still of the Bucky McMillan conspiracy theory.
Well,
I do believe that one.
No, I want. Well, the thing is, I come right back at Bucky on that though, because when the whistle blew, I don't know how many times you've looked at this. I've looked at it multiple times. When the whistle blew, it was not 0.6.
No,
it was It was at least 0.8.
And even still,
it was either 0.8 or 0.9. But
still enough time for a catch and shoot.
Well, but if there's 0.8 or 0.9, then there's no doubt about shot.
For sure.
But the thing is, they obviously had to determine that the ball touched the rim.
I'd still want to see that.
To see proof that the ball touched the rim. Because if it didn't touch the rim, there should be 2.4 seconds.
And my problem is like, look, the ACC did a really good job this year with their football.
Absolutely.
Listen and see. Here's what we're seeing. Here's what we're doing.
Yep.
Here's the transparency. I do not think for a million years the SEC wants to do that.
Well, I'm absolutely sure that they don't.
Because that is not their style. That is not Greg Sankey's style. This is a conference that does not care about transparency. This is not a conference that cares about – they feel like they're kind of above that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the brand and protecting their own, and that's what they've always been about from day one. That's always – especially under him. And so I think if we could have heard and seen, okay – you could still be upset about it if you're an Auburn fan, but you have more clarity, and it's an easy PR win. But the problem is that the SEC, especially under this current leadership, does not think that is valuable enough, and that's ridiculous. But they also think they're too big to fail. They can do whatever they want, and that comes at a detriment not only to fans. It came to a detriment at teams because like the free throw thing, that was a call that screwed both teams. Because if it hits the rim,
game's going to be over.
Game's over. A&M has a point. If it didn't hit the rim, Auburn should have gotten the ball with a real clear shot with several seconds left.
With exactly what was on the clock. They had added
instead, they split the middle and then the nightmare scenario happens where, oh my God, Auburn gets this shot they shouldn't have been able to get off, and it goes in. Well, now they replay it, and it's like, oh, that's borderline. Well, they shouldn't have had the shot in the first place. All right, we're going to give it to A&M. Like, I put some credence to that. Like, I know people were like, why did Bucky say that? Like, well, it felt like they owed him a makeup call. Yeah, that's crazy for a head coach to say after a game. I kind of believe it, though. I kind of believe that would be the way they would operate in that situation.
But it was handled the wrong way.
Because guess what? If people aren't having to listen in and see – you can do that.
You're right.
But again, hey, guys, you know, guess what? we kind of screwed up to put him in this spot.
But there's still no explanation as to why that was 0.6 put on there.
No.
It should have either been 2.4 or when the whistle blew. It could not be something
different.
And it was
a weird, inadvertent whistle call. And, like, that's – I know. But they went over and then
looked at the monitor after that. So, so again, without knowing, my initial thought was they've got to be looking to see if the ball hit the rim.
And that's
what it should have been.
And it's a shame because I think this Auburn team, now in back-to-back SEC games, has had a lot of issues but have had shots to win these games.
Well, they've had fantastic finishes, but –
You can't put yourself in that situation.
But you cannot have a situation where you got a 16-point lead at home with 13 and a half minutes to go all of a sudden lose your mind.
And the whole difference of the game, you don't want to like break it down to that 40 minutes of action into one thing, but it all came down to one thing. It was turnovers.
Absolutely.
That's it.
And it was two bunches of turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
The first 4 minutes of the game, Auburn had 5 turnovers.
Yeah.
And then in that 30-second span, they had three.
I wrote about it. I wrote about it at the Observer. If you break,
only had 13 in the whole game.
The game down into 5-minute stretches, Auburn had one turnover or fewer in five of them, and they won all of those 5-minute stretches handily. The three they didn't, A&M dominated.
Mm-hmm.
And there's your, and you lose really, that game by
really dominated.
Two, right? Yeah. Like Stephen Pearl was saying it today, and I believe him. I think the stats kind of back it up. I think kind of the way it went down. Auburn played better defense against A&M than they did against Georgia. They 100% did.
I thought after that initial flurry of turnovers at the 16-minute, from the 16-minute mark until that 13.5-minute mark of the second half, that's as good as I've seen Auburn play defensively this
year. There are 12 points in that game that come directly off of open shots because Auburn turned the ball over in the backcourt. Yep. You lose that game by two.
Yep.
Right? You take care of the ball. It's a different game. And I think when A&M had to play half-court offense, they had a harder time breaking down Auburn than I probably expected going in. Now, Auburn had their issues. And I think also when that comeback comes, when they have the 9 points in no time off of turnovers, bang, 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 A&M has all the confidence in the world, and they just start hitting. They start hitting shots from anywhere.
They were just out of it. Yeah, they were unconscious.
Hit crazy shots because they had the confidence built up from that. And so that's the thing. Is like if Auburn doesn't turn it over in that stretch as much, they may win that game because they can weather the storm a little bit better. And so, yes, this is not a great defensive team. Everybody knows that at this point. They've got their issues. They got to fix all. They got to fix some stuff. I do think though, this team's got enough firepower and enough fight. Period. That they're going to put themselves in position to win games even with their defensive issues. This game was a clear example of, like, here's where your offense can kill your defense. And that's the one thing this Auburn team's about. You're not a good enough defensive team to hand teams points.
No.
And they did in this game, and that's why they won, and that was a big reason why Georgia ended up winning because Auburn just could, like, gave opportunities. More in the Georgia game is, like, Auburn couldn't finish their own looks, but in this one, it's like you can't hand the other team opportunities with your own offense.
Yeah, well, in the Georgia game, Auburn was like 50% on layups, and Georgia was 90% on layups. I mean,
Auburn in the last two games have had a really bad time hitting layups. And now, contesting them is one thing, but like they have a really bad finishing problem right now.
Yeah, they have. It sure didn't help when Phillip went out either.
Yeah. And the good news, though, it does sound like he is going to be able to try to give it a go this weekend. I'd be surprised if he played, but he was back at practice today. Was able to kind of do some things. He's a tough dude, man. Like, and I would imagine that the big kid is going to try to go out there and try to give it a go on Saturday if he's able to, because Auburn needs him. It's just pain tolerance at this point. But yeah, they've avoided it. There's the other thing too, and this is kind of just a side note. I've had people ask me, and like, and it's like, well, why are all these? Why do all these teams feel like they're deeper than Auburn? And I was like, because they are. Auburn's got two rotation players that are out.
Yeah,
completely. One out for the year. One who hadn't played in a month.
Yeah, without Phillip, Auburn had a seven. They were basically a seven man rotation.
Okay, and then let's look at the seven man rotation they do have. One of the guys is has been playing through injuries all year, and Keyshawn Murphy, like from the very beginning, he's had to play through it. Keyshawn Holmes, had to play through an ankle injury. So did Tahad Pettiford at points in this season. Now you're going to have Filip Jovic, probably in there. Not in the rotation as much. Simon Walker gets put behind the eight ball at the beginning, in the preseason because he's hurt. So it's like, yes. Is Auburn playing the best basketball they can with the pieces they have right now? No. Do they have a lot of stuff to work on? Absolutely. Have they also caught a ton of bad breaks and have bad injury luck right now? 100%. And it's crazy to see a team at that point, not making excuses for them, but it's crazy to see a team at this point with all the issues they do have. They're a couple bounces of the ball away of potentially being 2-0 in the SEC, and no one's freaking out right now, and
that close to beating Houston too. Yeah. But my concern is the psyche and the
They got to hold on.
This is a really good Arkansas team coming in. You lose this one to go 0-2 at home and 0-3 overall.
Yep.
You're really in a deep hole,
and you got to dig out of it now. Teams have been able to dig out of it.
Look at Arkansas last year.
Arkansas last year did like the unthinkable in the way they came back from
0-5
in the conference to being one shot away from making the Elite Eight. Right? They've pointed Stephen Pearl pointed to an example today, and it's been repeated. Purdue last year. Purdue last season started 9-6, got off to a rough start in Big Ten play, they were a team very much like Auburn last season. They were very much a team like Auburn is this season. Matt Painter even said that in Indianapolis after Auburn. I believe. Yeah, you were awesome last season with one of the best players in the country. Now you're having to reset, and it's going to be tough. But if you can stick it out, there's good things that could happen in the future. And then, you know, Pearl mentioned it today. The first year Auburn went to the Final Four, they were 2-4 in SEC play to start out and then caught fire and just figured it out. And there's some revisionist history going on because you say that and people are like, well, this team doesn't have Jared Harper and Bryce Brown and those guys. I'm like, newsflash, y'all were doing radio then. I was doing radio then. People weren't talking about that team
It's
held up in reverence because of the run that they went on. But people had real serious questions about Auburn, that season. And so there's plenty of time. You just got to stick it out and improve. And I think they've shown some signs of improvement. They've shown some signs of consistency, of good play. It's the consistency that eludes them. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact it's a brand new team, and you just got to learn and grow. Because you have no other choice.
334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline. We'd love your thoughts on Auburn basketball, college football, transfer portal, anything on your mind, college football playoff. When we're speaking of college football, huge ball game tonight. Of the Final Four, yeah, I'm sure maybe Drew with his Miami shirt had one of the Final Four. There aren't many people that would have expected this to be your Final Four. Miami, Ole Miss, Indiana, Oregon. Oregon probably the team that had the most hype of these four back in the preseason.
Yeah, I think that of the four teams left in the college football playoff, it does seem like Oregon is the one that folks would have expected. Being here, Ole Miss, people were, you know, they thought it could be pretty good, but I don't know about, you know,
yeah, I don't know
winning a couple of playoff
being
games
the
good,
last but, SEC team no, yeah, in the playoffs.
And it's crazy to think of like Ole Miss and Miami as like Cinderellas because they've, you know, Ole Miss has been pretty good the last couple of years and Miami's got championships. But yeah, I think the idea that one of those two teams is going to be in your national championship game is something people would have been really surprised by even a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, so we'd love to hear from you on that. Anything on your mind as we get to our bottom of the hour break here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio with Drew at the controls.
Yeah, I was thinking about what Justin said in the last segment about the SEC probably resisting more transparency when it comes to, I mean, even with ESPN, you see, like, when they go to the review during an NBA game on ESPN, you'll hear the conversation from the officials. Mm-hmm. They'll be in concert with the league. I wonder if the SEC would be comfortable having, in those situations, having someone from the league actually talking. I don't think they'd be comfortable doing that.
No, well,
I mean, the fact is I
wish they would do it regardless.
I asked.
They're not going to do anything like that. And the other thing, too.
Unless ESPN forces it and insists it. Because I asked Sankey a couple of years ago at Media Days about this, and he said he doesn't really see it happening. What is interesting is I said the same thing about injury reports.
He'd rather talk to you about what book he read this summer.
Sure. And I asked. Yeah,
what mountain he's climbed or what concert he's been to.
But the SEC clearly didn't want. Yes, he clearly didn't want injury reports either. And I think the market.
But that's the thing. It's like, I feel like if it's mandated or if we're getting to a point where it's mandated across. Because look, the Big Ten doesn't do it either.
No.
You know, and
no,
like, nobody does it. But the other problem college basketball officiating has is like, they're not conference officials. There are guys you see a bunch in the conference.
Right. Yeah, they're basically.
But it's a regional
free
thing.
Agents. I mean.
Right, these guys will call a Tuesday night game in the SEC, but they might have called a Monday night Conference USA game or something.
Or you may see them a couple of nights later out west. I mean, they're all across the country.
They're all over the place. Yeah,
so it's not talking to the same people that
not
the
like
officials.
Football.
Yeah, it's not concentrated.
Not where it's like these or are like SEC officials.
Or a professional sport, which has more of a
– No. To be clear, I think officiating across the major sports and period is just usually bad. But it's an impossible job. I think it could get better, and more transparency is the better. I think, you know, we ran into this a lot. I think it was the whole thing, the fight with, like, think about how long the technology has been around for, like, ABS in baseball and how it's just now taken into the point where it's like, all right, now we'll start doing that. I was like, umpires get protected and, like, referees get protected. And I get part of that. It's a very, very tough job, but, like, I mean,
and I don't think fans want
transparency. Teams want transparency. They don't get it.
Oh, yeah. And I don't believe that post-game press conferences for the officials would have a gigantic impact on these situations.
But that happens in the NFL. Yeah, There's a pool reporter.
It happens. Right, but I don't. I think we'd be searching for a lot of things. Yeah,
like the 2-minute report.
It does. It is interesting. Like, I wonder if it would prevent these. It wouldn't prevent these situations from happening, but you'd have more information about why things were. Yeah.
Because what did the SEC get to do here? Nope, that was the right call. Our guys made the right decision. Thank you.
We have indisputable evidence. You can't see it. No. We have indisputable evidence.
Who knows how many strongly worded letters have been fired off. Behind the scenes.
I'm sure plenty have.
In this situation. And you know, something else that Stephen mentioned was, and I think this was, I mean, when it happens, it's right around the time of that just astonishing 10-minute stretch where Texas A&M goes on a 40-12 run.
38-10. It was like 7.5 minutes. It was 38-10.
Right.
So it's unbelievable.
And Stephen mentioned fatigue. In the second half, you know, it being part of the problem.
And that's understandable. I mean, like we're saying, Auburn doesn't have as many players available right now.
Yeah, especially after you lost Jovic and I think what you're asking, especially it seems like we've mentioned it, like the backcourt depth and seeing Magwood get some run, although I know he had the turnovers, and seeing Simon get some minutes in that game. Like, I do wonder if that's just something they're going to have to live with, some mistakes at guard, because they need to.
There's no one left.
There's no one left, and you can't ask. You're gonna be looking for trouble if you're asking Tahad and Magwood, or Tahad and Overton to play
close to 40 minutes every night.
Yeah, if that's the plan, like that, yeah.
Yeah, you can't do that. They got to come up with some sort of and even if, you know, like that's Filip Jovic being healthy or not healthy, like you got to have it at some point. And so the fact that they were able to get there, I thought Simon did a decent job when he was out there.
Yeah, I did too.
You got to steal some minutes that way. And I think Magwood can continue to be a guy like that. Didn't play well against Texas A&M, but I think he's shown flashes in other areas that you're going to want to continue to see him get those opportunities. I mean, it's going to kind of learn through it, right? You know, it's not a team that's going to compete for a championship this season. This is going to be a team that's going to be fighting for an NCAA tournament berth. So at some point, you got to also be like, hey, let's help these guys grow, especially dudes that you feel like are going to be, could be part of your roster next year.
And that's the thought, that you maybe have several. It's college basketball, so you maybe have a lot that aren't going to be part of the future. But no, the thought that
you're guaranteed two that won't be.
Right. But the possibility that you've got Sebastian, Jovic, you've got Magwood and Simon as freshmen right now, all either in the rotation or trying to break into the rotation.
Freeman can come back.
Freeman and even Tahad has eligibility remaining. So no, it could be the beginning of something. And with Magwood, yeah, I mean Stephen even said it after the game, like he had a rough week, like between like the Georgia game. They had to take him out because of the fouls. So it was sort of his defense that got him. His defense got him into trouble against Georgia. His offense got him into trouble against Texas A&M. But I still think that they – I think the quote from Stephen is he wants to play Magwood more.
Yeah.
It's just he's got to be able to – he's got to be able to maximize his minutes.
And I think you just – like for Auburn fans, it's like this is a reset. This is an adjustment of expectations. This is a team that you found yourselves in. I keep saying it. I'll say it until they prove me wrong. This team reminds me a lot of the team from 3 years ago. It's just our issues are on defense instead of offense. What did they have a year earlier? It's a reset from having one of the best teams, an SEC champion, one of the best teams you had. Now it's like, whoa, we got to completely reset what you're doing for the most part, and you're having to put some new guys in, and it's a grind. It's a grind of a season, and I think they're going to do that again this year. It's just going to look different. 3 seasons ago, had some good wins, had some rough losses, and eventually made it to the NCAA tournament, won a game. Was leading at halftime against Houston and had their shot. So that's the type of team you're facing right now. And I know people aren't as going to be as fired up about that, but that's college basketball. That's
so the thing I'm going to remember, Bill, about that Auburn Texas A&M finish and the post game,
you annoying everyone on press row.
Oh yeah, and then oh yeah, sure, and then also I got my seat, and then of course in the post game, although this does involve the press, is in the post game because this happened on Jersey night, right? Remember, so Ferg's,
okay, this is a good story.
Ferg's in his Acuna jersey, and some people and Adam Cole and Peter and Ferg and I are in the media room downstairs, and Peter's fretting that he's like, man, I'm gonna have to ask Steven questions about this gut wrenching loss, and I'm gonna have to do it wearing this Bugs Bunny
Space Jam
basketball jersey over my hoodie, and he's like, what am I even gonna ask Steven? And I said, how about what's up, Doc?
That one killed. That was the other one, and then me and Nathan going back and forth about everyone being mad at us on Twitter for being like, well, here's an angle. It looks like Auburn might not have gotten the shot off, and they're like, well, I guess you hate Auburn then, huh? And I'm like, no, I'm just telling you why the call was what it was, because the one hard cam angle we got in the moment on the replay board, it looks like there's no shot.
Sure.
It was a good shot. So anyway,
yeah, it's not going to be one easy for anybody to get over. You just hope the players can.
And I think this team has done a good job of responding to adversity.
I know. It's just when it happens over and over.
It just keeps piling up.
We saw it. I mean, look, we saw it in football.
Sure.
It just felt like
– A little different.
Oh, I know. But, I mean, it's human nature. When it happens over and over, you start almost thinking, oh, crap, what's going to happen tonight?
Yeah. You don't want to be a team that's, like, learning how to lose, right? You know, you're just getting really good at perfecting how many different ways you can lose a game. I will say at least the Auburn basketball team's got some good wins on their schedule.
They have been unbelievable in the last minute. The last minute they of just, regulations has been just ridiculous.
This is a very crass way of putting it for this team. Like, and it's unfair, but like I've said, this team sometimes acts like it's, you know, it plays like it's too dumb at times. Like they just don't know what they're doing, and it just kind of goes crazy. But the thing about being dumb sometimes is you're too dumb to die. Like, you don't know when it's like, all right, I'm done. Like, yeah, you know, go kill me. Like, no, they just – the Georgia comeback will be, like, the all-timer. Like, how in the world did they do that? And, like, this one – I mean, the
Spanish – it's 8 points with a minute.
Yeah, the Spanish homeboy for Texas A&M, who's really, really good, knocks down that three with a hand in his face way downtown. This game's
it's
over.
88-80. And they call time with exactly a minute.
This game's over. And
there's an Isaacs three, right, that puts them up 11, right, where you think like –
But they're up eight with a minute left.
Left.
So this is like Reggie Miller stuff.
But that swing, that swing from 16 to 11.
It was 16 to 12.
Yeah,
it actually got to 12.
I mean, once you fall – I mean, and they're – I mean, the thought that Auburn would make it a game again, right? And then you're right, and then to ward it off in the final minute, only to come up. Yeah.
And
just
that's the
short
thing. It's the thing about this team is just that they have all their issues, and you could just say a couple things go their way, they're 2-0 right now, and no one's complaining, no one's hitting the panic button. Same team, you know, like think about it, like. Of all the players.
And Steven's still probably unhappy about the defense.
Sure.
Like, I mean, he's still making a lot of the same points about.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
Look, man,
about
I mean.
Defense and turnovers.
But that's my thing is, like, you know, you don't want to play the results too much.
Sure.
Right? Because, like, yes, they have things to improve, but, like, you know, they're continuing to fight at this point. I will remind everyone that late last season, before the Creighton game in the second round of the NCAA tournament, there were a lot of people who thought that Auburn basketball team was dead because what? It wasn't looking good. Forgetting what they had done earlier, forgetting what they'd done to that point. It was what was happening right now. And it's like, okay, let's take a step back. How bad are these losses really? What have they done to this point? Okay, take it one game at a time and move forward. The reset, take it one game at a time before it got Auburn to a freaking Final Four, you know? Like that's my thing with this team is, like, do they have problems? Yeah, absolutely. They have shown an ability to win and put themselves in positions to win despite those flaws, unless they're playing Michigan, Arizona, and Purdue. Guess what? Those are probably the three of the four best teams in the country.
And how,
I mean, I know Vanderbilt's charging into
Vandy's
that group.
Pretty good.
Yeah, they're really pretty good.
And for the unhappiness about the defense, you know, not just from Steven, but from fans too. It's like, oh, look how many points they've given up. And it's like, they've given up a lot of points in games they lost by. Yeah.
No, this is still,
they also lost 30.
But I'm talking about in the last two. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean it's like
they have a top 15 offense in the country on KenPom. Like this team has a ton of offensive firepower. Mm-hmm. If they can just cut down their mistakes, turning the ball over, but especially their defensive mistakes, they're going to be in a position to win some of these games, cuz this league is fairly wide open. There's not, unless you're Vanderbilt, there's not a team in this league that doesn't have some really rough losses on their schedule, and also some pretty good wins as well. But, like, Vandy's really the only one, and it's just Vandy's going to be like, we're going to keep doing this till we lose, and I don't know when they're going to lose.
The way the wind can change direction really quickly right now, because, like, if Auburn – think about it this way. If Auburn thumps Arkansas at home on Saturday –
they just beat Arkansas.
Yeah, sure. But it's like if Auburn beats Arkansas and looks impressive in that win, mm-hmm. suddenly it's like – well, did we rush to judgment after two close losses?
Probably, but nobody ever learns any of that.
Right, and you know what? And you look at the whiplash this week with Georgia. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, Georgia beat Auburn for the first time in a couple of years, and they're
yeah, and then they went to Gainesville. I mean, that's more reasonable than Arkansas.
They were doing really well, and then Sompto got a
got hurt,
and then they
got
right, and then like kept hanging in there.
That was a close game with 10 minutes left.
You know, that shot counts. Are people freaking out as much? No. So you're going to let, again, yes, they play the game to win or lose, right? Like, that's the thing. But are you going to let one moment and one shot completely change your opinion of team? No, it shouldn't.
No.
You look at the total body of work.
No, but Saturday is critical.
Critical.
I mean, you're 0-3 and two home losses. I don't, you know. You got to make those up somewhere.
Let me ask you.
Usually, and you got to do something on the
road. They're gonna have to win 9 or 10 SEC games this year to probably make the tournament comfortably. And
you start 0-3 with a 6-game stretch you got coming up shortly. I mean,
you'd have to play really well, but
you got some fighting to do.
I think this team has the capability? Yeah, the same team that came back to beat St. John's, the same team that beat NC State, the same team that had a real shot to beat Houston. Yeah, people forget also about like the late non-foul call at the end of the Houston game. Like they just haven't caught any breaks.
Mm-hmm.
Like what break has Auburn caught this year? And so maybe those things balance out at some point. But you can't wait for that to happen. You got to keep getting better in the meantime.
It feels like the start of the Arkansas game is important too, because if Auburn were to start sluggish against Arkansas. You would think,
my thing is this team hadn't given up yet and they have a lot of fight, but that's always TBD, right? You know, you got to keep doing it. Mm-hmm. Like as Bill was saying earlier with the football team, that's a great point. Like, yeah, at some point they just, hey, we're fighting, and mm-hmm. We scored 3 points against Kentucky and everything's and you know time to fire.
Yeah, I mean, I never felt like they quit.
Kentucky was the closest thing because it was just like, okay, these guys have no belief.
That's right. Like,
a single American touchdown would have been enough to hang in there, and they just didn't have it.
It feels like our preview of Auburn-Arkansas is going to be like a greatest hits of the last two games, because a lot of what you can say about what this team needs to do to beat Arkansas, a lot of the stuff you would say they needed to do to beat Georgia and a lot of the stuff they needed to do
there are a lot of similarities.
Yeah, I mean, including staying out of foul trouble. Right, Arkansas is a team that's very comfortable forcing a ton of possessions and playing a game that way, mm-hmm. a rapid fire sort of basketball game, and that can lead to a lot of fouls, and that can lead to guys not being available at the end. And for Auburn, you need all hands on deck at the end, you know, assuming it's going to be close. So yeah, I wonder if it wasn't like they fouled A&M a ton, right? Like that wasn't
that wasn't the reason. That Auburn lost,
Arkansas plays a style where they're going to go to the basket more too. So yeah, I'm looking forward to breaking down the Arkansas game with Ferg later on.
All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Again, love for you to join in. Don't forget David Paschal will be with us at the top of hour number two. But you can give us a call 334-321-1390 as we continue here with the Thursday Drive.
Remember when you would dream about
.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson, got Drew at the controls. Ferg, talk a little bit about what all you got going. You've talked about the mailbag coming out tomorrow. You guys obviously about to do another podcast. So
yeah.
What all's there? What all can folks look for?
Yeah, pretty busy week for us. We had a full breakdown of Byron Brown film room there. I mean, I think there's like 60-something clips in it and a bunch of words and stats. So a full breakdown of everything.
That's always good.
Yeah,
it's always good. I appreciate that more than a blank page.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
started
I was trying to remember the number. I was trying to remember the number. It was close to
words and numbers.
It was like
letters.
It was like close to 4,000 when I was done.
Yeah, wow. Ferg started writing that when Byram announced Monday night. So it was really impressive, right? You got that out in like 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. he didn't announce until Tuesday morning.
Tuesday morning.
Yeah, it was. It was like 9 o'clock Tuesday.
No, I'd been sitting on that one for a little bit.
You got the Keyshawn ready?
I don't have a full one on Keyshawn yet. I want to kind of do those like some of those guys a little bit later. But yeah, Byron being the quarterback, it was
he was the main piece.
I really like Jeremiah Coger though. By the way, like
I like a lot of those receivers from down there.
Obviously,
there's nothing wrong with Chaz Nimrod and Neptune. I mean,
yeah, basketball coverage this week.
Great names.
From the A&M game Saturday. I'll have a full preview of Auburn Arkansas on the written side, and then earlier this week, our buddy Justin Lee started the Auburn Torch, which is covering Olympic sports at Auburn, which is really cool. But part of him doing that is his football and basketball columns that he used to write for the OA News now go to the Observer. So you can check out his first. He wrote a really good first column. You can check out it came out on Monday. Really good first column on like how college football has like really changed and like how people are like, I don't know if I like this anymore. And like talking about how important it is for fans to continue to like stay engaged and make your voice heard, even though everything's kind of going crazy.
It's right harder. Now. It is definitely
it's a whole lot harder. It's a whole lot harder. And I thought he did a really good job of like talking to fans about like how this new era is going to be different and tough, you know, for some people to kind of get a grasp on. But, you know, it's important that, you know, Auburn fans don't just be like, ah, I don't like this anymore. But, like, you know, it's the passion's still there. And so I thought it was really good. So all that at auburnobserver.com, $6 a month or $60 a year.
And we're going to try to have Jay Lee on the show at some point in the future to talk about the Torch, too, because he's
– I think I'm gonna have him on next week when I run the show.
That sounds good. Justin's got next Friday. Yeah. Dan has Monday. Justin has Friday. Let's go ahead and give you the official rest of it. It is Jason Caldwell Tuesday, Brian Matthews Wednesday, and then Jacob Goins Thursday.
Yeah, should be a lot of fun next week.
I would have done Thursday, but I'll be coming back from a zoo, so yeah, I'll be here on Friday.
Yeah, I'm making the trip out to the west coast of the Sun Belt.
I'm going south.
Yeah, so we're all headed in. Yeah, Bill's putting the lime in the coconut next week. Yeah. We're all going in different directions.
It's supposed to be in the 80s the whole time I'm down there, when it's going to be a little chilly here. What's the weather going to be like in Missouri? Going to be a little.
It's probably chilly.
I would think it'll be pretty cool.
It's going to be cold here.
Yeah. All right, we're halfway done. Again, David Paschal joins us early on in hour number two. You can join us a little later on, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline. Stick with us for hour number two of the Thursday Drive.
The sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio, and a lot going on. We talked a good bit, Auburn basketball. The Tigers right there with Kentucky and Texas and, I guess, Ole Miss. And I was just looking at the schedule. There's four or five teams that are 0-2 in conference play here to get things started. LSU is also 0-2, but Auburn with Arkansas coming in on Saturday. We talked a little bit about, you know, the Tigers trying to bounce back from two gut-wrenching, heart-stopping losses as they get going. Transfer portal continues. We found out where a couple of former Auburn defenders will be lining up next year. Amaris Williams will be a Georgia Bulldog. Malik Blockton will be an LSU Tiger.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of guys who, and this is why, you know, as far as we know, Justin, Jeremiah Cobb is sticking around. And that's,
I was told earlier this week that if a guy has not entered the portal yet, there's a good chance that he's still hanging around because they're in the middle of workouts right now.
Yeah, the only thing would be I could see maybe some young players if they look and here in the next few days multiple players are brought in at their position that have more experience then they might
maybe
go in.
But like I think if you're not in the portal at this point you're probably you know
I think Auburn's interested in a guy that just went into the portal in the last day or so from Penn State.
And with Jeremiah Cobb, I made this point on the Observer show, but like
– I mean like from Auburn's perspective.
Yeah, I know.
Practically everyone who fits Jeremiah Cobb's profile of a guy who played a lot the last couple of years for Auburn and projects as a starter at a lot of places in college football, practically everyone you could say that about left from the 2025 team. Like with he was a 1 year guy. It was his first year at Auburn. Oh, okay. Like pretty much everyone else.
Multi-year players, you're right.
Yeah, I mean you're talking about and so to hold on to Jeremiah Cobb is really impressive and I think shows
justice for champion.
It shows some character. I think as far as you know Jeremiah Cobb choosing
he just
to
likes being here.
Choosing to finish what he started at Auburn. Like
fits in right really well with his scheme. I think if you're like, hey, we're going to run a scheme where we try to spread out the field as much as possible and run underneath it, it's like Jeremiah Cobb fits that bill really well, especially in a rotation. I don't know if he can be, you know, I mean he ended up being a really good running back this season, but like being a guy who's like the number one like bell cow running back, I don't know if that's the best use of his skill. But putting him in a rotation that you run three, maybe four guys more evenly, I like it. I like his game a lot. I've always been a big Cobb fan. I do think this offense is great for him.
And those 2010 and 2013 and 2014 Auburn offenses that ran the quarterback really effectively, folks will remember it wasn't just the quarterback running the football for those teams. Like usually it really helps to have those fakes work a lot better. If teams are afraid of the running back that the quarterback is giving the ball to, right? If you have someone that's dangerous alongside a quarterback in the backfield, you can run the zone read, you can run the play action stuff, you can get stuff working that can be really effective. And yeah, I think the thought that the thought of a Byron Brown, Jeremiah Cobb backfield on top of whatever else they potentially add, like those are two. Especially for a team that's sort of in a rebuild, right? Year one of a new head coach, those are two really experienced options you're going to have at quarterback and running back, and yeah, it's a big retention for a couple of reasons.
All right, we'll talk more about that. So let's see, Auburn added a player in Cody Sigler, defensive tackle who was at Arkansas State this past year. So I believe that is 13. I think it's 13 additions. To go along with about 20 more than that subtractions. It's 33, 34, something like
really
that.
Really interesting, the guys who were coming in on visits and all that, doing some big game hunting at wide receiver.
Yeah, there's no question about that.
It's like,
question
and obviously
about
on the
that.
Offensive line, they got some pieces to get. Mm-hmm. Corner's the one spot where I'm looking at right now, like, okay, I think they needed another starter quality guy.
At least.
And then some more depth.
At least one, yeah. All right, we'll talk more about that a little later on. We're just a couple of hours away from the first semifinal in the college football playoffs, and we'll talk about that and more with our good friend joining us right now on the Drive Hotline. Just wrapped up his show up in Chattanooga on WGOW, and of course, a longtime writer for the Chattanooga Times Free Press. That's our good friend David Pascal. David, Happy New Year. How you doing?
Happy New Year to you guys as well. Hope you all had a great holidays. What is Auburn's count when it comes to former South Florida players?
I believe it is 10, I think. Yeah, 10.
Okay. So about half of what Penn State's done with Matt Campbell from Iowa State. They've got 19 former mm-hmm. Cyclones at Penn State. So, yeah, I mean, we saw the blueprint a few years ago when Cignetti took 13 from James Madison, and that seemed to work out okay.
Well, I mean, you look, and most of the guys that are coming from South Florida are on the offensive side, led obviously by quarterback right. Byron Brown. So that makes sense when you've got an offensive coach in Alex Golish, his coordinator Joel Gordon, his offensive line coach and Tyler Hudnick and Hudanic. Hoodie. But I mean, you've got guys that understand that offense with Byron Brown and most of his receiving core coming in.
I'm telling you, y'all are going to have so much fun watching that team play just because having lived through that with Tennessee with Golish in 21 and 22, you know, in 21 they couldn't stop anybody, but they scored so many points that, I mean, Pruitt left that program in such a mess. The COVID year they won just 3 games. And I thought 6-6 would be just worthy of a parade. And they went 7-5 in the regular season and were just a lot of fun to watch. And you just think about their ability to sell the Hendon Hooker years in 21 and 22 and how good he looked. And Tennessee's first Biletnikoff winner with Jalin Hyatt in 2022. I mean, there's going to be a lot of – there's a great track record with Golish. And you mentioned the stability. I guess I read where – it's the first time since like Jarrett Stidham and Chip Lindsey that, you know, you're going to have the same quarterback and coordinator. I mean, it's just at different schools. So it's kind of a, but there's a stability factor that I think is going to be huge for that too.
I was going to ask you, I haven't been on at the same time you've been on in a while. That's my fault. But I did want to ask
you, you've been on the road.
Your experience covering Tennessee in those Golish years, I wanted to ask you what you thought about him as a coach. I know you've probably talked about this in the past. I was just interested to hear kind of your perspective. The folks I know who have covered Tennessee, they feel like, you know, he did such a really good job as you know, when he was at Tennessee. And the offense has still been really good at UT, but there's been a little bit of a difference. And you can just kind of feel like he was a guy who made a tremendous amount of impact in the last couple – or in, I should say in just 2 years up in Knoxville.
Yeah, I mean, both 21 and 22 were just gargantuan leaps, and if my numbers are right, in 22 it was 525 yards a game and 46 points a game. So I mean, it was they were just a pinball machine when it came to that offense, and of course, it's really fast. It's been the fastest since Heupel's been there. It's been the fastest offense in the country. But yeah, there's always that dynamic of, okay, kind of like with Saban and Kirby. I mean, how much, remember the knock on Kirby was like, well, how much is Kirby mm-hmm. and how much of it was Saban?
Oh, I think we
may. Ooh, we might have to try David again.
We may have.
Oh man!
No, okay,
Tennessee folks got him.
He was, once he started, the Kirby stuff, it was too hot for radio.
Yeah, let's see if we can't get him back there, Drew. I mean, obviously,
that's just my thing. I was interested to hear what David was saying about that because I have friends who cover Tennessee and he had talked in the past. He was like, yeah, Golish did a really good job, and it's like the offense is just, it's just been a little bit of a difference.
It's not quite the same.
Yeah, and I think what I really like about Golish, I don't know if Tennessee's done it as much. You go watch that USF offense. It's the pace and space. It's going wild and spreading things out. But you know, you got to remember, Alex Golish comes from the Midwest. That man cut his teeth at this level at Iowa State. You know, being a tight ends coach at Iowa State, there's some smash mouth to it.
Oh, absolutely. He believes in physicality.
Yeah, it's not just finesse. Yeah, it's not finesse football.
I'll tell you what I like, and I want to, you know, we're getting David back. It's like I like the idea that you're bringing in an offensive master. I mean, you've tried the whole offensive mastermind thing before, but have you tried it with a quarterback who has played as extensively for that mastermind coming in with him? Like, you think about like when Malzahn came in, you didn't have quarterbacks that were like really closely associated with.
Yeah, and I would say like another one that, you know, David would be really knowledgeable about kind of reminds me to an extent of what Vandy did with New Mexico State and said, hey, y'all come on in.
Bring like, part of the staff and some of his top playmakers
Diego Pavia. This feels like this is kind of like the new way to do things if you're doing coaching changes in college football now.
Oh, definitely. That's a good. That's a great analogy. I mean, using New Mexico State because they did. I mean, they rated. I mean, from the Jerry Kill all the way down. I mean, and it absolutely worked. But yeah, I just think, and again, y'all touched on it. The biggest questions will be the defense. I mean, that was a really good defense this year, and you know, Tennessee just wound up with Kay and Lee, the corner. Well, you know, I heard y'all talking about the corners when I was waiting first to get on, but if they can shore up that defense, that offense is gonna. I'm trying to go back. There just weren't many. The Georgia game in 2022 would be the one time that defense, that Orange Bowl championship year, just really got shut down, because their other loss that year was that wild game at South Carolina where they just couldn't stop them, and Spencer Rattler looked like the greatest quarterback of all time, and they hung 63 on him. So, yeah, I mean, it's just that was a really effective offense under Gulish those 2 years.
It is crazy. I mean, this one-time portal – I said it a while ago, and I may be wrong, but it just seems like they're more options. I mean, obviously with nearly 4,000 players in there, but there are a ton of big name guys that have jumped into the portal, and obviously everybody's scrambling trying to get them, you know, under contract so they can get them in school here for the spring.
How about somebody a little bit close to David, in the sense that I mean David, you they can hear you in Martin, Tennessee, right, where Ty Simpson's dad is the coach, and Ty Simpson was talking about, I think his dad said there were multiple big opportunities if he wanted to stay in college football rather than go and try his luck in the NFL draft. I mean, there are a lot of places that would have wanted to be in the Ty Simpson sweepstakes.
Yeah, and of course Sam Levitt, the former Arizona State quarterback, he was in Knoxville last night, and 2 nights ago he's sitting courtside with Lane Kiffin for the LSU South Carolina game. The quarterback situation really has been crazy, and there have been just some of these portal decisions. You're like, okay, I can see why he did that, and some of them, like, you know, with Bama, Isaiah Horton within the last hour, you know, the news breaking of him in the portal is one. But the one that got Tennessee the other day was Jordan Ross, the former 5-star edge rusher from Vestavia Hills. I mean, you think about Tennessee's edge rushing situation this year, and that's been, you know, for all the offense that they've produced under Heupel, edge rusher has been, like, really, really good. When you think about Byron Young, who's lighting it up with the Rams, James Pierce today was named Rookie of the Month. That edge rushing position's been as good as any for Tennessee. Joshua Josephs was their main guy this year. He was a senior, and so that left Jordan Ross and Caleb Herring, and both of them got in the portal. So now Tennessee's without their top three edge rushers from this season. It's just kind of some of these things make just no sense whatsoever.
Well, it's almost like maybe some of them are thinking, and I hope they're right, that this can't continue to just escalate the way it has. I mean, because this year it seems like the numbers are skyrocketing from what we've heard before. You've even got situations now, I mean, with the Washington quarterback, you know, wanting to just renege. It's like, it doesn't matter that I signed a $4 million deal. I can get a whole lot more than that. You wonder if maybe, and I'm hoping, something can at least be done to try to, you know, just curb the ability for everybody to not only be a free agent, but not have to worry about any agreements that they've made, you know, that are still in effect.
Yeah, because people are now coming out. You're starting to read a lot of national media coming out this afternoon saying maybe this, because, you know, his agent
is no longer representing
him. Mm-hmm. And so you have had a couple of national people saying maybe this will be the case that finally starts to turn some of this. Because everybody always says that, you know, college football's turned into an NFL. It's like, no, the NFL kind of does it right. I mean, Bill, if you're the fifth-round pick of the NFL draft and I'm 25th, you're going to make more money than me because everything's slotted. Nothing is slotted in college football right now. It's just a free-for-all. It's chaos.
Yeah, and the NFL, everybody can't just leave every year. Everybody's not on a one-year deal, so we'll see. I mean, it is crazy, but it gives us plenty to be talking about this time of year.
Even if you acknowledge that we're in a system where, as long as guys have eligibility, they're on one-year deals all the time, the thought of a guy making the agreement with a school and saying, I'm on board for next year, putting his name on the line that is dotted, mm-hmm. and then deciding.
And then 3 days later going, I got a better offer.
That feels like even in a Wild West system, that feels especially cutthroat.
Oh, no question. No question. And I think everybody now is just getting excited for Byron Brown and DJ Lagway in the transfer quarterback bowl next year.
That is right. Yeah. Opening the season in Atlanta that.
When it could be one of many transfer quarterback bowls to open next season.
You are not kidding. In the meantime, we've got the first semifinal tonight. Hey, I like the fact that it's still fairly fresh that we had the quarterfinals, and here we are with the semis tonight and tomorrow night.
Two quarterbacks who weren't on their respective teams last year either, right? That are facing off tonight.
Yeah, I think the fascinating angle to this is just we all saw New Year's Day, those first two games were just so blah as far as just entertainment. But then that Sugar Bowl just lived up to everything and mm-hmm. then some, and you just saw what a special talent Trinidad Chambliss was. I just think it's going to be fascinating. Can he be, because he was Houdini, multiple times in New Orleans, but can he do that against a Miami front? You know, Miami in two playoff games against not exactly chopped liver with Texas A&M and Ohio State, 12 sacks in those two games. Yep. So I just think the Miami's front and Chambliss's elusiveness is definitely going to be worth the price of admission.
Yeah, I think, we were talking about it a while ago. I mean, of these four teams, the other thing that's really sort of cool is it's not like these are nobodies or anything. Of course, Indiana's the team that has come out of nowhere with Kurt Cignetti over the last couple of years. But, I mean, Oregon's probably the team that seemed the most likely of these four back in the preseason or early season.
Yes, I tell you what's just fascinating about this Final Four is if you think about the national champions in recent years, you go back to Burrow's year at LSU, and then Bama won it the next year, and then Georgia a couple of times. You had Michigan, Ohio State. These are all programs that play in 100,000-seat stadiums except for Georgia. Georgia's is almost 94, so it's close. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about a deal now where Miami plays at Hard Rock Stadium. That thing's listed at 65,000, but everybody knows most Miami games have about 40,000 people there. You think about Ole Miss, Vaught Hemingway's like 64,000. Outson Stadium in Oregon's only like 54,000, and Indiana Stadium's 52. So these are all small by comparison. I mean, these are all stadiums that are smaller than like Kroger Field in Lexington.
I hadn't thought about that, but that's that is really interesting.
Yeah. And you could have from an Auburn standpoint, because it does feel like Auburn has had the Midas touch lately as far as turning opposing quarterbacks into gold before their careers are over. We mentioned New Mexico State, coming in and beating Auburn with Diego Pavia, who went on to that great career at Vanderbilt. You could have two quarterbacks in the national championship game who made their first career road start at Jordan-Hare Stadium, right? Carson Beck and Fernando Mendoza could be the two guys. He of course was the quarterback at Cal when they came to Auburn and won early in the 24 season. So I mean you've got and then there's also the quarterback at Utah this year who had a strong season who was New Mexico's quarterback when they came and played Auburn. So it's remarkable how many of these guys have gone on to, and Carson Beck's maybe cheating a little bit because Georgia was a pretty good team when he was there. But,
oh yeah,
but I mean it's several guys who have gone on to superstardom, and Auburn saw them very early in their careers.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Auburn doesn't score any points for that, but no, I know exactly what you're saying, yeah. Hey, I got to ask Justin, though, a couple of nights ago, it's unreal. I've got a nephew that's a student at Auburn, and he texted me about 10 minutes after that game, and he goes, Uncle David, what was it like? How did you handle losing at Auburn? And I told him as an Auburn grad, if you can handle being an Auburn fan, you can handle anything life throws at you.
Oh.
So I was just, I guess did Pearl speak to the media today? Did he find out any more about just that ending the other night?
You'll appreciate this. So, yeah, Stephen Pearl talked to us today, and he said the SEC has maintained to them that they had indisputable video evidence to overturn the call, and it was asked, well, have you seen it? And he said, no.
No.
So.
No.
So, you know, he's trying to move on as quickly as they can because they get Arkansas this weekend, and that's such a tough team. But, yeah, I mean, it was very much the least transparent process possible, even a couple days later.
Yeah. As someone who – I wasn't out in Fayetteville, but as someone who watched every moment of Arkansas putting it on Tennessee, I think that right now – although Vanderbilt, I mean, give them credit, they hadn't lost yet. But I think Arkansas with those five-star – guards, and I think the upside of that program right now, that would be my pick right now to win the league. Arkansas is awfully good,
and that's what Auburn fans want.
Yeah, Auburn really needs one after after losing two heartbreakers where they could have won in extreme circumstances. Here comes the most talented team in
of
the league.
Three. Yeah, no question.
Yeah, that Acuff's awfully special. He lit Tennessee up for 29. I mean, he's something to behold.
Hmm. Well, what are your thoughts before we wrap it up? What are your thoughts? Who do you like here in the two playoff games, David?
You know, I guess if I had to pick the safest, I would probably pick Indiana because they've already beaten Oregon once.
Yeah, and it was there.
I think they're going to have more fans tomorrow. I mean, we were getting calls on our show in Chattanooga because from Nashville going around down to Atlanta, there are all sorts of Indiana fans coming through Chattanooga.
Makes sense.
So I kind of like Indiana in that one. This one tonight is an absolute coin flip. I wish I could offer something intelligent. I know Miami's the slight favorite, but I mean, neither one of the results tonight would surprise me. I just there's something about this Ole Miss team that's been pretty special, and you just think about how each time they play in the playoff, they're down fewer and fewer assistant coaches. But you know, in today's era of these massive staffs, I mean that seems to matter less and less. So it's a fun — that Ole Miss story really is a fun one.
Oh, it really is, and as you said, I mean, we've had a great game. I'm thinking and I'm hoping that we've got two really good ball games here today and tomorrow.
Yeah, and I'm curious what the attendance is. As we've seen, the butts and seats in some of these bowl games have not been great, but the television ratings have been really good, and of course that's your bottom line.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't know if tonight's going to be a hard sellout or not, just because I don't know. You know, you had Ole Miss obviously flock to New Orleans, but flocking to New Orleans and flocking to Arizona are two different things.
A whole lot different. You're right.
Yeah,
on a Thursday night, midweek night. Yeah,
exactly. And Miami doesn't have the largest traveling fan base in the world to begin with. So I'd be curious that, you know, tonight is listed as a sellout, but I'll be curious if you can see some empty seats in that one. And again, tomorrow, you know, I covered Oregon and Mercedes-Benz when Georgia clobbered them like 49-3 about 3 or 4 years ago to open the season. They didn't travel that much to that, but that was a season opener. Again, I just think Indiana is going to have the crowd. And boy, you know, Bama went through this, and Clemson, you know, just the expenses of following your team over and over. I'd be really curious to know what some of these Indiana fans are paying to go to Pasadena and then Atlanta back-to-back with Miami right around the corner if they keep winning.
Yeah, they're hoping they find out how much it hits their wallets. I guarantee you that. David, it's always great, really really good to talk to you again. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything that you got going.
Sure thing. TimesFreePress.com for the articles and WGOW.com for sport talk from 2 to 5 Central each week.
All right, David, thanks a lot, man. Have a great weekend.
You guys do the same. Always enjoy talking to y'all.
All right, David. See you, buddy. David Pascal.
WGNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin, Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise, your thoughts on you know, Auburn basketball, football. Saw today that Perfect Game has picked Auburn as a top 10 baseball team.
Yeah, we're about a month away or so, a little more than a month away from college baseball season.
Jason reminding us yesterday, they start full practice Monday.
Yeah.
They're first day of baseball practice.
Ratcheting it up, and should be an especially exciting baseball season with Auburn, a preseason top 10 in several polls. So
opened the season the day before Valentine's Day, February 13th.
The All-American team that Rawlings sponsors, I forget which publication does
Baseball America.
Yeah, I think it's Baseball.
It used to be Baseball America.
But Chris Rembert is a first-team All-American second baseman in the preseason. So a couple of really exciting developments for Auburn on what should be, what could be really interesting baseball season as they look to bounce back from getting all the way to Super Regionals before falling to Coastal Carolina last year, and the first team without Ike Irish, who moved on
right
to the
but another very highly touted class coming in, joining those outstanding freshmen. I mean, Chase Frelich, made some All-American preseason teams as well. Guys like Bub Terrell. Then you've got Eric Guevara, Cade Ballou, hopefully healthy back this year. Yeah. I mean, Lucas Steele, and then you add some of the young guys coming in, the new players. Todd Clay, local guy. I mean, with a huge fall, the fall MVP.
And there's probably benefit to familiarity for a college baseball team.
Oh, yeah.
As far as these guys know each other. They know. I mean, a lot of it is still. Are you winning your matchup, right? Are you making the most of your at-bats? Are you, doing what you need to in the field? As opposed to basketball or football, which are really, so team-reliant. And so, I mean, you clearly see the benefit. I mean, Auburn men's basketball last year.
Oh, yeah.
Is one of these teams where it's like
familiarity,
the benefit of familiarity when everyone else is trying to reset. And that's what, I know we're bouncing around sports a little bit here, but that's what gets me excited about the thought of you've got a quarterback who's made 32 starts for this coach.
Mm-hmm.
In an era where so many teams are, I mean, think about how much of last offseason was about Jackson Arnold trying to get up to speed, right? And learning Hugh Freeze's system, right? And that offense, needing to.
Regardless of how similar offenses are, there's going to be different terminology. I mean, it's you don't know what the coach is going to expect. Yeah. When you've been around, and like you said, I mean, look, this is his fourth year of being with Alex Golish and Joel Gordon, the offensive coordinator and play caller. So he knows how they react in certain situations and what they expect from him, and don't undersell the importance of that.
Yeah, I would think that if anybody had ended up with Byron Brown this offseason, there's a ton of reason for that fan base to be excited, sure, about what they could be landing. The thought that you're getting him with the offense and with the playbook and with the coaches and now with several of his top targets. I mean, is there a parallel as far as a quarterback with Byron Brown's pedigree is making this kind of jump with all of these? I know there's Pavia, to an extent.
John Mateer had his, his guy.
But I mean, and even the thought
wasn't this good last year.
Yeah. No, you're right.
And the thought that he's bringing some of
his, I'm just trying to think of guys that coaches came,
along
with their play call.
I guess you could say Oklahoma State's trying something similar, right? Because Oklahoma State went and got, mm-hmm, North Texas's quarterback, mm-hmm, and coach, and several other North Texas players are making the jump to yeah, Oklahoma State. So, I mean, maybe Auburn is at the start of something we'll see more regularly in college football when there's a dynamic group of five offense where it's all right, well, let's just go get the coach and see if he can bring in as many of those impact guys in year one, but it's got to be a really difficult jump for Byron Brown to go from USF to an SEC school, making it as comfortable for him as possible by providing all of these different,
and it's a big one.
Was it the first Indiana team?
Mm-mm. Caleb Williams from Oklahoma to USC.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Head coach, mm-hmm, offense coordinator. Mm-hmm. Star quarterback following him from Oak, because he was his freshman year. He was top 10 in yards per attempt and pretty much every stat at Oklahoma. And then he follows Lincoln Riley to USC and does the exact same thing.
And I guess you could also look at Dion brought a lot with him on top of Shadur. Like, right?
Yeah,
like
there's, yeah, I mean, there's, there you go. That's
like
yeah.
there's
that,
I mean, that's
worked.
Yeah. I mean, by the end of Shadur's career, yeah, I mean, it was a quarterback certainly wasn't the problem at Colorado.
In the portal era, I think that's the only one where you can really see this is a head coach and a quarterback, and he was really good, and now you're picking him up and putting him in a different situation. All right, Caleb Williams is the only one I can think of where all the pieces came around with that. Obviously, North Texas is going to try the same thing with Mestemaker and those guys this year, but I think that's kind of more of it. Like, can't really make the Pavia comparison, obviously, because it wasn't the head coach, but it was a lot of the pieces.
Well, but his head coach did come along, but not as head coach.
And Pavia was good, but he wasn't like all world.
Oh, no. Everybody didn't go, oh, wow, Vandy's going to be really good now because Diego Pavia is there.
Yeah, he was 35th in passing that year. Okay, it was good. I mean, he was a great Group of Five quarterback.
We're not talking about a conference player of the year type of guy, though, like generally speaking, like that's no, what you're
Caleb Williams is
and,
the one,
and these two quarterbacks, and I guess to an extent, and even with Caleb Williams, right, you're talking about a jump from the Big 12 to one of these other pretty prominent leagues, like with
what used to be the prominent
right
Big 12,
right? Yeah. But so it's like and with a guy like Pavia or Shadur, right, you're talking about a pretty big jump.
Oh, a huge jump.
A huge
Jackson State.
Exactly.
To Colorado, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what, yeah, what so I'm really intrigued by, like, if you're going to make that, if you're going to bet big on a quarterback being able to navigate that jump, make it as easy for him as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, Auburn is seemingly given Byron Brown. You know, we'll see how the offensive line shakes out.
He's got the keys.
Yeah.
He's got the keys. But I know we need to get to break. When we come back, Justin, want to get your thoughts on what Auburn would like to do or you think they may do. They're still looking for another quarterback as well, and they may just depends on how far they have to look. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us here for the final 20 minutes of the Thursday Drive.
Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 22 minutes away from 6 o'clock. Bill, Dan, and Justin here in the studio with Drew at the controls. We're just talking during the break. Yeah, this David Pascal was talking about Sam Levitt. Is there in Knoxville. I believe he's still there. And Tennessee desperately wants him. But LSU is a school that I'm not sure they have a scholarship quarterback on the roster. And Lane Kiffin, Dan, you're right. Yeah, Lane's going to find a quarterback. Well, the guy he wants is Damon Williams, the Washington quarterback who has already signed a $4+ billion deal with Washington. And he's trying to get out of that. And like David said, Williams' agent has said, "That's it. I'm done." When your agent backs away because your player has signed a legal agreement that he believes is binding, this could be the case that really changes the face of college athletics.
The question that I think from what I understand of the Damon Williams Jr. deal, the question that'll be in debate is, can a student athlete sign away his right to go in the portal? Can he sign a deal with a university that says, I'm not going in? Can he sign an endorsement deal with the university, an NIL deal with the university that says, I'm not going to enter the transfer portal this offseason, and then change his mind a couple of days later and say, put me in the transfer portal?
I think if you sign a deal that says you are doing these things for the University of Washington, that they can say, we're going to determine what you're doing for the University of Washington. You're not going to be doing it in Baton Rouge.
Yeah, quoting the ESPN.com story about Washington, you know, sources told Pete Thamel, Washington is prepared to pursue, and this is the University of Washington, not like Washington, D.C., not like the federal government, but sources told Thamel that Washington is prepared to pursue all legal avenues to enforce Williams' contract. According to details of the contract, Washington is not obligated to enter Williams into the portal or, quote, otherwise assist or facilitate the student athlete's transfer to another college or university, unquote. So that's going to be what, like,
that's what Williams and his now attorney are talking about, taking legal action against Washington to allow that. But I don't think there's a lot of precedent for that for them winning this. I think there's been a lot of precedent for players being able to, under the current situation that we have, be able to move and do all this. But I think that we're going to find out what is a binding legal agreement.
Yeah. Well, or they're going to have to come to a financial settlement as far as what he would have to, which I think
have to be some reparation.
I know there's another ongoing lawsuit where is it the player trying to leave Georgia?
Yes.
Georgia has to prove damages.
He left, didn't he?
And there's the question of, like, did, you know, by breaking an NIL deal, has a player as
this one's, like, a little as, different, as a school, though. I don't think the Georgia player had gotten paid. I think that's there's another case that I heard today, and I'm trying to recall. I think there's a third player, somebody who just wanted to enter the portal today.
I wonder if
who had just recently in the last few days signed another agreement.
I wonder if the lesson is you post-date that check until the day the portal closes, and that's when the players get paid, just in case they
Well, the lesson should be for the players: don't sign anything until you know. You know, it's like, look, I mean, it seems like more and more players decided to go ahead and jump in the portal and find out what was going to happen this year, and I guess, you know, under the current climate that we have, that would probably be the smartest thing to do.
There was a player last year, right, the guy who left Wisconsin from Miami, who had a contract with a team, and the question was whether or not that contract could prohibit him from going into the portal and going to play somewhere else, and I think Xavier Lucas ended up playing for Miami.
He did. He's starting for them tonight, I believe.
And these are both Big Ten schools.
Yes.
The
Big Ten is not happy with this. That's the thing. Washington is also hoping to get the help of the conference in trying to come up with some clarification and then some guidelines, rules, if you will. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to it. And Pat is up. Hey, Pat.
Hey, bud.
Hey, guys, I'll give you my opinion. Okay, so you can't make somebody do something, okay? If you're in, like, the NFL, you sign a deal, you sign a contract, and you can get banned out of the NFL because you signed a deal to go into the NFL. It's like a country club. But if you pay someone to build a shed in your backyard and they don't come do it, all you can do is sue them. So they'll have to pay – he'll have to pay – Washington or whatever money he was given, he'll lose. He'll have to pay the money, but they can't make him play for them. It's not legal. I mean, you can't.
No, they can't make him play for them. But if the Big Ten were to be able to get the SEC to go along with something like that, they could then get the conferences to say you can't do that, and that's the way they'd be able to do it. But not. Yep, you're right. Right now, legally, they can't keep him from playing, I don't think, for anybody, but they would definitely have the right to be compensated.
But wouldn't that be collusion or whatever, or
if the conferences and the schools in the conference agree on it? No, I don't think so.
I'm saying the conferences don't have a right
conference. You don't think conferences can ban players?
How does the conference have a right to? I guess they technically could, but
I think they do.
I mean, but why would you want to do that if you're like the SEC? Why would Ole Miss agree with that?
Well, Ole Miss LSU wouldn't want to agree with that. But I think most coaches and athletics directors would like there to be something where they feel like they at least have some assurance when they sign a player that means they've got that player for the length of time that player has agreed to.
Sure, I understand, but I think it's the same thing, though. It's like if a coach decides they want to leave, they can leave. Is a league going to blackball a coach from leaving? Like if Lane Kiffin decided to, like, let's say Alabama decided to fire their coach today, and then Lane Kiffin said, well, I'm going to go there. Can the league ban Lane Kiffin from coaching at Alabama?
No, I wouldn't.
I mean, that's what you're basically doing.
I wouldn't think so, although I think the SEC did a good job of keeping Hugh Freeze from being a head coach without saying as much.
To me, Pat, this Washington quarterback deal is about when are these decisions final. Like, that's ultimately what this is about. I know people want it to be about, well, we need more control over players that want to leave every year. It's like that feels like that genie's out of the bottle until you have collective bargaining or something very, very substantial coming in. You know, you're going to have a situation where players decide every offseason they're going to have the option available to test their market. But the thought of a guy making a deal with a school and saying, all right, I'm in for next year, and then changing his mind a couple of days later, like can the school stop him and say no, you made a deal with us for next year, you're not going into the portal. Like, to me, that's what's up for debate here with this quarterback, and I don't know what the, I mean, my suspicion is that you're right, that it's going to come down to, well, that there's going to be a financial settlement that frees him from his obligation with Washington and lets him go play somewhere else. But I don't think any school likes the idea of, yeah, you've settled with a player, and then a couple of days later, he decides he wants to reopen the bidding.
Yeah, well, I mean, what you're basically doing is you're forcing someone to do something that they don't want to do. And he didn't
have to sign the agreement. I mean, the thing is, he could have waited. Sure. He could have waited and signed it after the portal closed. I mean,
by trying to keep Damon Williams Jr. at Washington, I understand what you're saying. That would be trying to make a guy honor an agreement
What's Auburn trying to do with a lot of its younger players? I mean, every school is trying to do.
But now you have a player who has made an agreement with you and now sort of openly wants out of that agreement, which is different than like what you're talking about with Auburn, right? So it's like look,
you hire someone to build your house, and then they sign a contract, and then they go, oh, sorry, I'm moving to Arkansas, and you go, okay, well, no, you're not going to move to Arkansas. And he's like, no, you just, all you could do is say, okay, I'm out, money or whatever, and then you sue them, and then you go in front of a judge, and then you try to win the money that you were damaged, but you can't make that person build your house.
That's the interesting thing. And I was thinking about this earlier today. Yes, I mean, until players are employees, right now they're independent contractors, basically, is what they are. So they are free agents that can do whatever, whenever. The only thing that is a little bit of a sticking that I thought would ever be a little bit of a sticking point, which I guess doesn't matter anymore, is eligibility, because apparently everybody's eligible everywhere.
Now one thing I would point out, though, Pat, is that in pro sports, teams have the leverage of saying, you have a contract with us, you're going to play for us, or you're not going to play. Like, that is one thing that a professional team can say.
Absolutely.
And that happens all the time, where a quarterback...
Yeah, but that's because if the NFL says, if you don't follow your contract, then you're not going to play in the NFL anymore. That's because they have their own country club they design. That's the difference. Is there's not a country club. The NCAA is not a country club. So there's no penalty. You can't punish. You can't say you can't play college anymore. I mean, they can say that, but that person would go and sue. If this guy wanted to go play at LSU, and LSU wanted him to play there, he would go in front of a judge and he would win millions and millions of dollars.
That does seem to be the difference right now, in that if a quarterback in the NFL decided he was unhappy with his deal with his NFL team, signed a 5-year deal, and he got cold feet 6 months later, said, I don't want to play for this team anymore. And he said, I'm going to put this in front of a judge. He would probably lose.
He would lose.
Like, he would lose. And the judge would say, no, the NFL team doesn't have to let you out of your contract just because you changed your mind 6 months later. Like, that's not a valid reason. In college athletics, one would think that a guy who changed his mind a couple of days later, and if this thing gets to, like, I don't know what legal ground the NCAA can stand on to make
it's funny. No, the NCAA would need to backtrack and wish that they had said years ago that players are employees. Because if they did, if players were employees, they couldn't do that.
Or if they would have said, okay, we're going to create this college football thing, and everyone's got to join. So Auburn, Alabama, y'all got to sign on a contract that you're going to follow our guidelines, that everyone that plays for you is going to follow our guidelines.
That's what the NCAA thought they had years ago.
That's right. That's right. But they never made everybody sign it, and they would have to make every single person sign it, every school sign it.
Oh, they did. They actually did sign under the old rules, but those rules have been challenged now and have been blown up. But no, schools did have to.
The charter, right?
Yeah, schools did have to agree to that. And, I mean, everybody, every employee and players were trained on the specific rules that related to their sport.
Yeah, but see, in the NFL, you join. You get a franchise, you join, and then you're signing over, basically saying, "I'm going to follow these rules." I don't know that there's, if there was a solid contract that the NCAA ever made with Auburn, with every other school, they would just show it to the judge and then he'd tell all the players, "Hey, sorry, you lose." You know what I'm saying?
There aren't those specifics, but there are. I mean, there are indeed. Conference rules that schools had to agree on, and that the conferences had to agree on to allow the schools.
Keep in mind too, though, but there were agreements between the NCAA and schools. The student athletes challenged those
right
in a court of law and won. Like those agreements were in place, and then a judge looked at them and said,
"If they had won, the very first thing they asked for, one of the very first things they asked for was to be employees." A lot of all this wouldn't be what we have
recognizing unions. Absolutely. And things. Yeah.
We're way behind. Got to get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
Remember when you would dream about...
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final couple of minutes here of the Thursday Drive. All right, we'll see if there are any more... I expect there to be more additions. Auburn's got 13 thus far in the transfer portal. I would say at least 20 more is probably what Auburn is looking for before they're done, because I think they're only around 70 in total scholarships, Justin.
I have 67 right now, but I'm going to have everybody on the list.
I was going to say, I think I got up to 70, 69 or 70, so. But anyway, there's still room for quite a few more. And obviously, offensive line, defensive line, cornerbacks.
Corner, yeah.
I think they probably.
And I think you could fill out pretty much everything else. Like, yeah. You need another quarterback. You could use another running back or two. You could use another wide receiver or two. Figure it out.
Justin has convinced me, too, on the idea that, like, if Auburn decides to go, not just with Cale Ellis, but if Auburn wants to go younger. With a Buster or a Ward on the offensive line, you know, one of those guard spots. Like,
you still got to have more guys.
Though. Oh, no,
you've
got to
have
more
bodies on the offensive
line. No, you're not done. And you'd
have to all be. They're at 10 right now.
I think at least.
They need at least five more,
probably,
I think.
Yeah.
And one or two guys with major conference starting experience, especially tackle guys, you know, would be.
I think a good offensive line next year for Auburn would be three transfers. Cale Ellis, and then another young guy you really like that you can start developing. I don't know if you want to just portal heavy.
I think that would be good, a little continuity.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right, Justin, let everybody know again, how they can get it and what all's coming up there at the Observer.
Auburn Observer, big day tomorrow. Just finished up a mailbag. It is gigantic. You can check that out at auburnobserver.com. Also, a podcast where we will talk Byron Brown, we'll talk Cody Sigler, we will talk basketball as well. Plenty of stuff at auburnobserver.com. Sign up there.
And Justin will be back next Friday.
Next Friday. I got the ship.
Hosting the show. Don Dunn will be in all week. Dan and I will be back tomorrow, and Coach Dunn will be in with us as well then. But we're out of time here on the Thursday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.